The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome to Layers, a podcast about style and how we get dressed, with Stevie Mackenzie Smith and me, Anna Kinsella. This episode's theme is power.
It's funny because this theme isn't something I felt an easy connection to in the way that I have with some of the other topics we've discussed on previous episodes. I'm not sure that wearing certain clothes makes me necessarily feel powerful as an emotion, I guess. I think for me, power is more about my mood or what I'm doing at that time. And clothes, you know, well, I guess dressing up, I really like dressing up, I don't do it that often, but it's more likely to make me feel glamorous maybe than powerful. But I feel like there's some ambiguity around this topic, and I think that we've got like a lot of territory to mine.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is, as you said, it kind of comes into that idea of like roles and dressing up and also work, I guess. Like,
yeah, I think that it's, well, we've kind of talked about this before, how power inevitably sometimes becomes a conversation about work and being professional when it comes to clothes.
Yes.
But what about you? Like, have there been moments when you felt powerful because of what you wore?
Well, I think in my work, I don't often have a need to demonstrate kind of visual power. You know, I don't really make deals and I do not that much presenting. You know, I'm not in sales, basically.
You don't have to hype yourself up before a board meeting or something.
Yeah, exactly. I don't have to walk into a room and have everyone know that I'm in charge most of the time.
Not in a work setting.
Not in a work setting. But if I do think about what makes me feel powerful work-wise, it's about having ideas. Like, I feel most powerful in my work when I'm sitting around and then I have a great idea for something. Mm. And while that doesn't have a connection to how I dress, it is important that you feel comfortable and happy and like yourself. I don't think you can have ideas if you're not feeling at ease in who you are and what you look like and all that.
Yeah, definitely. I think that confidence and power or something. I mean, yeah, I think confidence plays into feeling powerful, certainly for me and for a lot of people. I think I wonder how much dressing powerfully is about creating an armor sometimes. You know, this whole idea of faking it till you make it and just putting on something that feels like it's going to get you to where you need to be. Mm. I think that's how I've often viewed the idea of power. And it's interesting that I keep wanting to say, like, power dressing, which is, I think that's where the obvious connotations are for me, and we're just really used to hearing that phrase. So maybe that's why it's not resonating so much for me personally right now. And I think also just from thinking about it, maybe I'm going through a stage where I feel more self-assured, and perhaps maybe I'm thinking of power in negative terms, as if it's about needing to prove yourself in some way.
Yeah, I understand what you mean about it being about confidence and faking it till you make it. It certainly is. It's so linked to roles, and especially gendered roles as well, which I think we mentioned earlier before we started recording about how it's either, for women, it's either kind of trying to trick people into thinking you're a man in a certain way, or it's about vamping it up and being very traditionally feminine in another sort of way. And maybe we need to hear what makes other people feel powerful.
I started wearing suits to feel powerful about 10 years ago when I got this amazing, fine, textured wool black blazer from Zara.
Tailoring, without a doubt. Good tailoring makes one feel rich, powerful, invincible. And when it's cut perfectly, it feels like a second skin.
To feel powerful, I like to wear bright colours. That's kind of my go-to.
I would probably wear a suit or some trousers if I wanted to feel powerful, because they make me feel like Katharine Hepburn and give me a better sense of stride.
To feel powerful, I wear it entirely red. Just everything, and it has to be as clean and beautifully red as possible.
If I want to feel powerful, I wear something that is incredibly out there and interesting. It might be a hat on arrival, it might be a really fabulous jacket or a statement piece of jewellery. I'll find who my tribe are as well by doing that. I don't mind waking people up a little bit with my style, you know, getting them off their guard.
I can't think of a particular type of garment, but I feel powerful when I have whatever I'm wearing on top tucked into my trousers. I don't know why that is, but I think it just says something. I think it makes you feel a bit exposed because your midriff is completely exposed or your waistline is completely exposed. But if you walk around with your shirt or your t-shirt or even your jumper tucked in, it almost looks a bit weird. Or I felt completely naked the first time I did it, but actually it can look really flattering. You can see your bum, you can see your waist. I think if you carry it with confidence, you can feel very powerful, you can look powerful. It makes me feel powerful.
Okay, Stevie, I'll ask you again. Was there a time that you felt powerful, and how did that relate to how you were dressed?
So I've been thinking about this. One of the moments that really stands out for me when I felt powerful in quite a different way was when I was a pallbearer at a funeral. I think that because traditionally maybe it's seen as a man's job, you know, there are all of these images of strong men carrying coffins. But because it was my granny's funeral and my mum had suggested that we carry her coffin, I think that as an act felt powerful. Mm. And so I was just very proud, and that felt powerful. And then also there was more power that came from the fact that I was wearing quite inappropriate shoes. Ooh. That you think, like, of all the tasks to be wearing inappropriate shoes, like carrying dangerous. A coffin is, yeah, it's kind of up there. So I was wearing these Marx Almeida mules, which I bought when they did a collaboration with Topshop. Mm-hmm. And I was wearing them with tights, so mules and tights, there's a lot of, you know, slipping potential there. But I was carrying this very heavy box in impractical heels, in front of a lot of people that really mattered. And I think that just felt powerful, like I was kind of doing it on my own terms. Mm. And I wasn't one of those men that you see carrying a coffin. I was there with my mum. Mm. So the clothes didn't make me feel powerful, but they were part of this unusual power.
But in a way, it's kind of like subverting those roles that we mentioned earlier. Mm. You know, like, as you said, you did it your way, but you still were interacting with that idea of what a pallbearer looks like and who does that job.
Yeah, totally.
So maybe that's where the power comes from.
Yeah, and I think that sometimes this is where it becomes a more interesting conversation, is when we bring gender into it and what sort of role you're trying to perform. And I think that it will be quite exciting maybe in the future when we're, in the future, who knows when this will happen, but when we're not quite so constricted by these rigorous gender roles, maybe power will just feel different or
might look
weirder.
Different.
Yeah, and we wouldn't need to explore it in the same ways through our clothes.
Yeah, that's true.
So before we started recording this, you talked about a dress that you only wear when you're on holiday.
Yeah, I was trying to think of what clothes I have that do make me feel powerful, if we exclude work from the equation. And I have this very bright red full-length sleeveless shirt dress with kind of a mad print on it. And it's vintage and I love it, but I only wear it on holidays. I have worn it in London, but it doesn't really make sense in London. And I think it's about changing the context for me personally. It's not that I become a different person on holiday, but it feels more correct on holidays. It's too light or it's too much for the city, maybe.
Is it? Do you think, I'm wondering which holidays have you worn it on? Are there certain places that you can think, or maybe you don't even remember the holiday. You're just like, it was how you felt in the dress.
Yeah, I think it's just how I felt. Like, I haven't worn it in New York, say, but I've probably worn it in Rome or somewhere in a city in Italy. But it also looks great on the beach.
A red dress for Italy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got a lot of movement in it, you know, it kind of swishes and it's buttoned through all the way. It's a very freeing dress. And I think for me, the power comes in that sense of freedom.
Is it about the fact that when you're on holiday, you have that time to walk in a different way, like take more time maybe? And when you're at home in London, you're maybe more consumed by your everyday routines and just getting things done, and you wouldn't wear that dress?
Yeah, I think the way I dress in the city is really delineated by kind of unwritten rules. And even, you know, my own desires then become rules, because it's about, I want to dress in this kind of way and I want to be this kind of person. And I wonder if maybe our shared conundrum with power dressing is, how do you dress in a way that feels powerful when you might not want to attract attention to yourself? Because I don't want to attract attention to myself in the city. And I'm thinking about what you said earlier about feeling more self-assured now. And to me, that feeling of feeling self-assured is one of not wanting to turn heads, for me personally.
Yeah.
And I wonder if our problem is that that feels incompatible with what we think of as dressing powerfully.
Yeah, I think we could dig ourselves into a hole on this one. Okay. Let's speak to somebody who has a different take.
My name is Atega Uagba. I am a writer, a brand consultant, and I'm also the founder of Women Who, which is a community for women who do creative work. I say that, but actually it's increasingly just women who work, full stop. Mm. So it's a community for working women that I set up about a year and a half ago. And host events, do podcasts, a newsletter, create content, basically just whatever I think will help working women's work better.
And can you tell us where we can listen to the podcast?
So the podcast, it's more of a radio show. I never know what to call it. So it's called In Good Company and it's on NTS. It's a monthly radio show. It's like the last Monday of every month. And you can also listen to it on iTunes. So just search In Good Company and it's all there, and it's just conversations with working women who I think are really cool.
Cool. Yeah.
I think one of the reasons why I thought Atega would be a great guest is because we are both creative working women, but every time I listen to your podcast or read something you've written, you seem to know a lot more about creative working women than we might.
Oh, that's really flattering. I think I mean, just the nature of what I do, I have a lot of conversations with people and I'm constantly researching, like reading and absorbing loads of information about how to work better. And I think I've just really immersed myself in that world. So I think that's probably why it seems that way, but I'm definitely still figuring a lot of things out myself. But I think doing Women Who actually has allowed me to learn just so much more about how other people make it work. I think it's been really, I've learned as much from it as I hope other people have gotten out of it.
So. Mm.
Yeah.
So the theme for this episode is power.
Okay.
I'd like to know your thoughts on what exactly power means when it comes to how we get dressed and how you interpret that, because I think me and Anna have sort of worked ourselves into a little bit of a hole about how and what it means, basically. So go ahead and kind of...
I think power, when it comes to dressing and when it comes to work, I very much think of it as wearing something that makes me, I don't want to sound trite, but makes me feel like my best self, or projects the aura of myself to the outside world that I want it to be. So in my case, that tends to be kind of slightly more dressy if I'm like doing an event. When I say dressy, I mean like wearing heels. So that kind of tends to be my go-to power move, which is funny because I'm fairly tall. And so when I was at university, I avoided heels like the plague because all of the boys were shorter than me. And
what height are you?
I'm 5'8", 5'9", mm-hmm. but they're all just really tiny. So
that's their problem.
Exactly. But I remember I had like all of my sort of girlfriends were all actually around the same height. And none of us ever wore heels and we were just quite self-conscious about it. And it was just, you know, we were just about the right height in flats. So it was sort of going to keep it that way. And then I got into the world of work and I found that my height and actually wearing heels to make myself even taller was actually something of an advantage. I think it made people take me more seriously. Not the heels, but the height. I think it almost kind of intimidated people a little bit, which was quite necessary because I was 20, 21. And I think otherwise a lot of people wouldn't have taken me seriously. But I definitely, I remember when I first started working, to my surprise, I wore heels constantly every day. And it's actually only more recently now that I've kind of fallen out of that habit. But like, without fail, I would wear heels to work every day. And people would be like, how do you do that every day? But that was just what I needed to do to feel more confident. It wasn't really about femininity. It was just about height.
What sort of heels would you wear to work?
Things that were comfortable. Never stilettos. So things that were comfortable to walk in. And I think thankfully those sorts of things are quite trendy. Things with like a block heel. Sort of kind of quite brogy kind of shoes. Like heeled brogues. Because I loved the whole collegiate vibe of it.
Yeah, I used to wear those.
They were definitely really I mean, yeah. They still are trendy. But there was a time where it was like that was the look.
Yeah.
And it felt like I was being... They weren't too kind of, what's the word, like flippy or like, too, they weren't too feminine. They'd be quite sort of chunky heels, but I would make sure that I could walk in them. Like, and also I started working in advertising, and definitely the role I was doing, I was always running around the building, chasing people, literally chasing people. So I needed to be able to like run around and walk fast. So they were always quite sensible. And I think it was only sort of in, maybe my last year full-time employment that I started working like heels in. I never wore trainers until I started working at Vice, and everyone there wore trainers. Nobody wore heels, and that's pretty much when I stopped wearing heels, actually. So.
Did you, because I remember when I started my first job after graduating uni, I'd wear heels as well.
Yeah.
But sometimes I would feel quite self-conscious about wearing them, and like, because I'm also quite tall, so I'd need to really embrace that height. Have you ever felt self-conscious with the heels and like you had to sort of work yourself through the feeling of being looked at?
No, I love it. I really love the feeling that wearing heels gives me. I think it's... I sometimes worry that I'm reverting to some awful stereotype about what women need to wear to be presentable in a professional scenario, like heels and a skirt. And, you know, I never really wear skirts, so it's just the heels thing. But I do think for me it's very much about... just having a bit more poise and just, yeah, being a bit taller. I think people react differently to me and treat me differently. And also being able to be, like, tall and, like, looks, you know, certain men in the eye when I was working, I think really made a difference. It's quite like a physical thing, that instead of looking up at someone, you're on their level. Yeah. I think that's actually quite important. And I think I would have... I'm not saying that, like, short women can't make it, but I think I definitely feel like that kind of physical... imbalance just kind of can sort of work its way into like the mental side of the relationship and the dynamics you have at work with men. So I think for me it was quite important that we were literally on a level playing field.
Do you find, I mean, as we said, you seem to know much more about creative working women than we do. Do you think it's important for women to have a kind of, in certain workplaces, like a quote-unquote kind of look, like a personal brand?
I think especially in this day of social media, I think having a personal brand aesthetically even can really get you ahead. And I think and I hope it's the same for men. I can definitely think of men that I've worked with who are kind of known for being well dressed, and that was kind of their thing. And I think just having that sort of veneer can be really helpful. But I think definitely I've seen so many women whose jobs aren't necessarily fashion. Obviously, if you work in the fashion industry, there is probably rightfully so, like, much more of an emphasis on what you wear. But even in creative industries that aren't within fashion, I've seen so many women I know or have watched from afar, I think, definitely carve out a bit of a niche for themselves based on how they present themselves. And it's not just about being like super attractive, but it's about having like a consistent look and having a distinctive look. I think paying attention to that sort of thing can pay dividends. And again, I'm not sure whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm sure it probably says a lot about the superficiality of social media and society, but it's the truth.
I think it makes you stand out, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
I think in so many professions you meet so many different people all the time, so if there's anything you can do to stand out, that's going to help you.
Exactly.
And and sometimes standing out isn't about wearing something that actually stands out. No, it's about the impression that you make.
Being memorable. Yeah. Exactly.
What are some of the things that you like to buy when it comes to making yourself feel powerful?
Good question.
Or wear, you know.
I think, so apart from wearing heels, which I have to say is my thing, I always wear jeans. And I think it's because, first of all, they suit me. Like, they suit my body type and I feel confident in them. And I've kind of gotten over the idea that jeans aren't smart. Like, I generally think if I wear like a pair of newish jeans that aren't like faded with like a good pair of shoes and like a good shirt or a good top. I think that's like a good smart look that will see me through the vast majority of situations that I can find myself in. So I think having a kind of long and lean silhouette through like skinny jeans or like slim cut jeans is very much my thing. And then after that, I wear a lot of basics actually. Like I always say that my style is boring, but like boring fashion. But it's just, you know, like I remember I was doing a shoot a couple of months ago and they were gonna like pull some options and they asked me to just like send over a little description about the sort of thing that I like to wear. And it was like, I don't wear this, I don't wear colour, I don't wear patterns, I don't wear this, I don't wear frills. And it was just like, oh my God, I'm sucking the fun out of this for whoever has to go and style the shoot. But actually when I thought about what it is that makes me feel most comfortable, it's very kind of plain, clean lines, but I like interesting cuts. So like in an ideal world, if I could afford to shop anywhere, I'd wear layers like Acne and like Helmut Lang, because I think they do basics, but they do them interestingly. Mm. But as it so happens, I can't afford to shop there.
So you should have just written in your response, Acne, Helmut Lang.
Oh, I actually did. And they actually pulled loads of stuff from there. Yeah, it was a really fun shoot. Yeah, ideal. Yeah. But unfortunately, obviously, I had to return it all at the end of the shoot. So.
Yeah.
I find that, I mean, I went freelance a few months ago, and being freelance, I find it just made me so bad for dressing for like various workplaces.
Mm.
When I have to go to someone's office for a meeting or to work there, I either like completely overplay it and wear something ridiculous that you probably shouldn't wear to an office, or I'm like showing up in basically like elevated pajama wear, you know, like not like, you know, but like I either look scruffy or I look too excited to be out of my house.
Mm.
Do you have any tips? Can you fix me? Is this something?
I think I definitely veer on the side of being too excited to leave the house in terms of what I wear. I often have to like pare it back. And,
yeah.
Because I often feel like I'm the kind of, but also I think it's because I want to show that I'm not like a scruffy freelancer.
Mm.
So I think people have this idea of what I do all day, what I don't do all day. So I'm quite keen. I'll often wear tailored trousers if I'm meeting someone for like an important meeting,
That's a good idea.
Yeah, and also I think wearing tailored trousers is something that I've only gotten into fairly recently. It's maybe in like the past year or so, where I've like found a few pairs that don't feel too much like the stuff that like your parents sent you to do work experience in. Like there's that kind of tailored trouser.
God, yeah.
And then there's like fashion-y tailored trousers, which are just basically anything that aren't like jeans or too flowy. I'm like, okay, I can get on board with this. But I find that finding a good pair of those...
Cheers.
Having a glass of wine. I find that having a few pairs of those have started to feel, to me, almost as comfortable as wearing jeans, which I think is pretty notable, because nothing's as comfortable as wearing jeans. So, yeah.
Okay, so some tailored trousers.
Yeah, that's going on my shopping list.
Also, Tegan, when you arrived today, you were wearing a really amazing camel coat.
Oh, yeah, but that coat is pretty much, it's seen me through like the deepest, darkest depths of winter. I'm so pleased with that. And I bought it about a year ago, maybe. So I bought it last winter. And it's such a great story, actually. I love telling the story because I was so smug when I found it. But I was in the market for like a big camel coat, and I was like prepared to spend a bit of money, like an investment buy. And I'd been browsing like, you know, all of the like online designer shops, and I hadn't really found anything that was exactly what I wanted and also within my budget. And then I was on a bus through Streatham, actually, and I just looked out of the window, and they've got quite a few good charity shops there, by the way, anyone listening. The charity shops in Streatham can be really good. But I looked out of the window, and it wasn't even my stop, and I just saw this coat in the window, and I was like, that's the coat I want. And I just hopped off. I was like, driver! And I literally hopped off and ran back and like went in. I was like, can I try on the coat in the window? And I put it on, it fit perfectly. And I was like, I'll take it. And it was like £12. It's like my favourite buy. And it's also really, really amazing quality.
Yeah, I love the idea of a power coat. I'm a big coat person. And I think that like a coat can save so much about a sloppy outfit, you know, especially in winter. So I think it's a good investment buy, or a good, even if it doesn't cost a lot, a good like conscious buy.
I sometimes find that coat, actually, even though it's literally the only coat that I wear now because I've retired all of my other coats because it's so warm, but sometimes it does make me feel a little bit too smart.
Do you think? Yeah.
Yeah, because it's quite a smart coat. So if I'm wearing it with jeans and trainers, then it's kind of like a cool high-low mix. But the second I wear anything smart underneath it, I've sometimes walked into situations and felt quite corporate because it is quite like a smart, tailored coat. So I'm, yeah, looking for a coat that can kind of like bring it down a level. But for the most part, I just don't care because it's so comfortable and warm. I think it's the best, yeah.
What will you be wearing in the summer?
In the summer?
Because the reason I ask this is because quite often I find in the summer that, like, where, you know, you're trying to, like, get around places, you're on public transport, which makes you really sweaty, and it's quite easy to feel flustered. And I, what Anna has just said about a coat, sometimes it feels like a coat can pull a look together. So in the summer, sometimes I end up feeling like I'm floundering a little bit.
Oh, I see what you mean. I think in the summer I tend to wear, I can think of one particular pair of sort of trousers, but I tend to wear dresses, actually, like one piece things where there aren't like things to like coordinate and tuck in and that sort of thing. I think like a jumpsuit or a dress in the summer actually makes you feel much more pulled together. So that's, I tend to always keep an eye out for like a good kind of knitted, kind of ribbed, knitted sounds too heavy for summer, but I mean kind of like a ribbed dress that is kind of like midi or maxi length. And then if I can get like a few, I've got like one in like navy and like black and like white. And then I kind of tend to wear those with like a good, nice looking pair of sandals because that makes me feel pulled together and you don't have to think about it very much. So I think that's what I rely on in the summer. Less kind of two-piece dressing and more one-pieces. Yeah. So if you search Women Who, that's women plural who on Instagram or Twitter, you can follow me there, or you can follow me on my personal account, which is at Otavia Uagba, and go to www. How many W's did I say there?
No, three.
Three W's.
Correct.
Womenwho.co, and that's the Women Who website, and you can find out more about our events and all the other fun stuff that we do.
My name is Sorrel Walsh, and I am a writer by day, and then I'm captain and co-founder of Women Run, which is a female running community based in London, but we have women running like all over the world.
And I imagine if you haven't run a distance like an ultra marathon before, that a lot of it is kind of battling with self-doubt.
Yeah, definitely.
And what I was interested in is, because our theme for this episode is about power and clothing and things like that, and is there like a kind of sense of like dressing for the part, or like do you approach gear as something that you can kind of convince yourself you can use in your favour in that way?
I think it doesn't necessarily matter what you wear when you move, in the sense of like anyone can run with no shoes on and an old baggy t-shirt, and it shouldn't really matter how much money you spend on kit. Although I do feel more comfortable when I feel like myself. Like, I remember when I first started running and I would just wear like neon pink because like I thought that that was what you had to do, and like now I can just wear what I want to wear and like feel like if I see my friends I'm not embarrassed. Not that I should be embarrassed, but you know what I mean, I feel like I'm just myself, so it's kind of nice to be able to do that, I think.
So what would be kind of like a favorite running outfit for you? Depends on the weather, or
definitely depends on the weather, especially like the weather at the minute.
Yeah,
I don't know, I love all my old like race t-shirts, all like t-shirts we've got from like when I was in Run Dem Crew and running with them a lot when I was a bit younger, we'd do like Bridge the Gap, so I've got a lot of t-shirts from those. So yeah, just, I guess whatever I kind of fancy wearing that day, and usually with a top knot or some flats or something to make me feel a bit more feminine.
Is there any kind of one piece of gear that you think is like, that you really, really love or that you wouldn't give up?
Probably my trainers is like the biggest one. Like I couldn't imagine, like I couldn't run a marathon without my trainers.
What kind of trainers do you wear?
So I generally, my favourite model is like Nike Pegasus. They just work for me, and they might not look like the most incredible trainers ever, but they're just good old faithful shoe.
And do you find that, you said that you like to kind of feel like yourself when you're getting dressed to run. As you've been running more and more, has it kind of influenced how you dress when you're not running?
Yeah, I would probably say actually it has, in the way that, like, I didn't really care much about sportswear brands and things like that. And I have quite a good relationship with Nike, who've helped like support me a lot in the past few years. And I think naturally I'll wear like Nike jumpers or like some trainers with, you know, like, maybe running trainers with some jeans. And not that like, I probably wouldn't run for the bus or something, but then sometimes, like, if I do need to run somewhere fast, I'm like, well, I've got running shoes on, so, like, I can, but I probably have mental, so.
Do you have any lucky garments or things that you always wear by?
Not necessarily garments, but probably jewellery. Like, yeah. I love my jewellery, and the pieces that I've got are from, like, my best friend or like my brother or my boyfriend. So I think those are the things that like I never take off.
And you'll wear with them to race as well?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And what sort of kind of earrings?
Yeah, like my silver earrings and then my silver rings, and then I've got a little Mancunian bee on my necklace, which is like, that's from my best friend Alex. So Alex got home close to me. So yeah. I guess like, you but then like... sometimes I think it's probably bad on a hot day if my like, Fingers swell up and then my rings get stuck on my fingers.
So I need more water, I guess.
That would not be good.
And what about running in a group? I imagine that's a great way to kind of share experiences and share wisdom as well and learn things. Is there anything that you have adopted from the women that you run with that has changed how, say, maybe how you get dressed or how you do your hair or any kind of how you might approach a race?
Yeah, I guess in terms of life, I think, like, you can learn so much from other people. Like, I don't think, like, I wouldn't get anywhere on my own, really. Like, some days I think, no, I need to do this on my own, and actually, like, you get so far with other people. And in terms of my running, I've learned so much from other people, and, like, to be able to kind of share that with others and then watch them grow is one of the main reasons why we started Women Run, and, like, it's so nice to even see that now. In terms of style, I guess, yeah, like, I have some Danish friends, and one of my friends, Nana and Julie, and they dress so, like, powerfully, and, like, even when they run, they often, I guess, they challenge what it is to look like, you know, your stereotypical female runner. They'll wear, like, big baggy shorts, like, big baggy t-shirts, and it's nice to feel like, oh, actually, like, you can just change it up a bit sometimes. So I say that, yeah, I have been influenced in that way, but I think it's a subconscious thing. I don't consciously think about the way I dress too much when I'm running like that.
Yeah. I think, like, especially I think on Instagram, you have this, like, really dominant image of, like, what a runner looks like sometimes. Yeah. And then I think in reality, do you think there's a gap between what that might kind of look like on social media or in advertising and how it actually looks for you?
Yeah, I think, like, especially, maybe it's changing with size and things like that, but I think especially, like, women, we come in all shapes and sizes, and, like, runners, like, typically, I think long-distance runners, you would normally think of, like, really, really slim and, like, quite muscular. And I kind of like that, like, women are, especially, I think, are challenging that now. It's like I don't personally feel like I look like a marathon runner, but I don't care. Like, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Like, so... Yeah, maybe that's the same with clothes as well. Like, you don't have to just wear, like I said, like neon and like the stuff that you used to get, like from, I don't know, I'm not going to name it, well, Sports Direct or something like that. You know, you don't have to go for those. You can be playful and stuff now, I think.
Pick it up a little bit. Yeah. Sorrel Walsh is a writer and runner who runs marathons and ultramarathons with the running group Women Run. For the uninitiated, an ultramarathon is any distance over a marathon, which is 42.2 kilometres, I think. So basically, it's a superhuman feat.
You can find Sorrel on Twitter at Sorrel Walsh, and you can check out Women Run at womenrun.com. That's WMNrun.com.
I love that idea of taking inspiration from the women around you, even though you're ostensibly all doing the same thing together. I think one thing I've learned from working on Layers, actually, is that you're never not learning and soaking things up from the people and the women around you. Influence and inspiration isn't something that you can just turn on and off. It's not like, now I'm thinking about clothes and now I'm not. I think in a way you're always learning. I really like that.
Yeah, sometimes with this podcast, I'm like, I find myself thinking, oh, are we even talking about clothes anymore? Like, are we staying on theme? But it just shows that...
It always comes back to clothes.
Well, and also all of these things blur. And, yeah, you know, the whole point in what we're trying to do with this, I guess, is talking about lives in relation to clothes and clothes in relation to lives, you know?
Exactly.
They're not individual things.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. Production is by Lucy Dearlove. By the way, our next episode will be the last of this current run, and we'd love to hear your thoughts about everything. We're devastated, but we've also had a great time.
Yeah, it's been great.
Email us at layerspodcast@gmail.com or Instagram DM us at layers.podcast, where we regularly post your missives in our stories.
They've been really great. It's been bringing me a lot of joy just reading about where people are buying their pants and their shirts from.
The pictures of people dancing, like, it just made my weekend.
Yeah, totally.
You're missing out if you're not following us, basically.
Yeah. Before we go, we'll leave you with Loved and Lost, our regular spot for clothes that have gone astray. This time, we're hearing from Elliot Howarth, a writer and assistant editor at Fantastic Man magazine. You can follow him on Instagram at Elliot Howarth, and Elliot is spelled E-L-I-O-T.
I once lost all my pants in a jungle. The jungle in question was a Belizean one, quite near to the Guatemalan border. I was there some years ago studying leafcutter ants. I won't explain why. I could spend my days roaming happily through the jungle, dense as it was, thanks to the trail of worker ants heading to and from the nest. Leafcutter ants commute, and they do so in a single brown-red river. Telling which ant is going where is simple enough. Ants leaving the nest are empty-mandibled, while those returning carry a large chunk of leaf. Each morning, I would walk down a jungle path until I spotted an ant highway. I would then travel abreast the stream, following the leaf-carrying ants to the nest and the leafless ones back at the end of the day. My working outfit was a relaxed turquoise broadcloth shirt by Ralph Lauren, beige Levi's corduroys, and a wide-brimmed cotton camouflage hat, often referred to as boonie hats, giggle hats, and jungle hats. I looked good, I remember, lazily formal, as I wandered through the trees for my appointment with the insects. I can't say I loved the pants. In fact, I can hardly remember them. I think they might have been from Marks & Spencer, possibly dark blue, likely cotton, probably not loose boxers, and absolutely not Y-fronts. The details of the pants are not important. What is important is that I lost them, all of them, save the pair I was wearing. It's their absence that is cemented in my memory. A jungle is not an easy place to be with only one pair of pants. There was no washing machine at the camp, but for a reasonable fee, a group of women from the nearest village would clean your clothes for you. One day, my shirts returned, perfectly starched. My trousers pressed and folded, but my pants did not. What happened to them remains a mystery, and I do not want to suggest for a moment that my pants were so irresistible that a group of old Belizean ladies had stolen them, but the fact remains that my laundry returned pantless, and pantless I remained. I briefly considered fashioning a Tarzan-style loincloth from a t-shirt, but through a rigorous system of hand washing and overnight drying, I kept my dignity intact. I would commute with the ants every morning in underwear, return, shower, wash them in a sink, and spend my evenings commando. It was actually quite nice. I eventually found some emergency replacements when passing through a small town. They appeared improbably in a newsagent type shop, a lone pack of three behind the counter next to the disposable razors and lighters. They are, to date, the worst pants I have ever owned, made of uncomfortable tartan print nylon, badly cut, and exorbitantly priced. Yet I couldn't have been happier to find those awful things, and their plasticky caress could have been the finest silk for all I cared. I still have them somewhere, part of a small collection of clothes, too broken, worn, crap, or hideous to wear, but too imbued with meaning for me to ever consider discarding. From time to time, I question why exactly I'm holding on to these things, but catch a glimmer of shiny nylon peeking from a lesser explored drawer, and for a moment, I'm back to a time of ants and jungles and maddening, blissful pantslessness.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.